4678481.
Hello? Tabitha? Hello?
Good evening and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyright and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have Mariah Stewart, who is the New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of 31 novels and 3 novellas and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal. She's a Rita finalist in Romantic Suspense and the recipient of the Award of Excellence for Contemporary Romance, a Rio Award for Excellence in Women's Fiction, and a Reviewer's Choice Award from Romantic Times magazine. A 3-time winner of the Golden Leaf Award presented by the New Jersey Romance Writers, Stewart has recently been awarded their Lifetime Achievement Award. She considers herself lucky, a lucky son of a gun, to have landed the best job in the world, getting paid to make up stories. At Pisetown, New Jersey, Stewart is a member of Bliss, Inc., Thriller Writers Association, Sisters in Crime, PASI, which we'll get her at, the Romance Writers of America, the New Jersey Romance Writers, and the Valley Forge Romance Writers, and the Washington Romance Writers. She lives with her husband and her 2 dogs, a geriatric golden retriever and a rambunctious rescue mixed retriever, amidst the rolling hills of Chester County, Pennsylvania, where she savors country life, tends to her gardens, and tries to avoid running into the Amish buggies off the road with her SUV. You can find out more at her website, which is mariahstewart.com. And welcome to the show. Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm Tabitha.
Yes. Sorry about the abrupt call. We had a little technical difficulty. My computer decided to freeze up on me, but it came on right as the show started. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad we got you on. You were a last-minute ad, but when they asked, I was like, oh, heck yeah. Let's get her on the show. So great. I'm so glad to have you. How are things on the West Coast, or East Coast, I mean?
East Coast. Oh, things are going to warm up, they tell me.
Oh boy.
We had
spring
a nice,
is early.
Warm stretch for a while, and then it got really, really cold, and we had the first real snow. I know people in New England had a lot more than we did, but we really didn't have very much snow at all in Pennsylvania, this part of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So, but it's
so you had a late
70
winter
this
snow.
Weekend.
Oh my. Well, I wish I was in your 70s because it's supposed to be like 90 here in Texas. So.
Sorry.
Waiting for a cold front. Come on, one more. Just one more this spring. So, well, welcome to the show. We have, and we didn't get to chat before the show, and I usually, if everybody that's listening, I usually get a few minutes to chat with my authors before I bring them on the show. So, you know, we didn't get a chance to really chat, and I was going to ask you in your bio what the PASIC is. Is it it's the Pennsylvania Sisters in Crime?
I believe it is, but you know what? Yes, it is, Sisters in Crime. But that was a really old bio. I now have more than 40 books.
Goodness.
Yeah, and
I got it from your website.
My geriatric golden retriever has left this earth.
Aw.
Yeah, we've still met
them.
Yeah,
they do that.
Yeah.
I had one, too. I had one that was, I've always had golden retrievers. My last one was 12 when we had to have him put down. But, yeah, I love golden retrievers. They're just the best dogs.
Our boy was 14.
Oh, wow. That's
14
really long
and a
for
half.
A big dog.
Oh,
yeah.
Very long. But he, he went blind and he was almost completely deaf, but he knew his way around the yard. Mm-hmm. And he was still a happy dog. So then he did develop a tumor on his shoulder, and that was it. It went very rapidly from there. But up until that time, he was just a happy boy. So we just, you know,
mine was 12,
blind
and
deaf,
he was in perfect health. He got a tumor in his mouth, and it was bleeding. And it was horrible, and but he was. He was a ball player, a big ball player. And, you know, when he wouldn't pick up the ball anymore, I knew something was wrong. So,
yeah.
did yours play with ball? Was he a good ball player? No?
No, he was just a lazy big boy.
How about
bring the
swimming?
Ball today,
did he like
I'll
to
chew
swim?
On it for a while. But,
right. Did he like to swim?
No. No,
oh,
and as a matter of fact, one time I let him out. I know, he was such a goof. I let him out of the house. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning. It was still dark out. And we had a pool. And I heard a splash. And I just knew it was him. And I knew he would be in the deep end. You know, he wouldn't be in the...
Of course.
And, of course, he couldn't see. And he couldn't hear me calling him. So I had to, like, I came in the house. I screamed for my husband and went back outside. And I was, like, trying to... grab him. It was just ridiculous, but because he weighed a lot.
Yeah.
But we did get him out, and he was fine. He shook himself off, but that was his one plop into the pool, and he was not going to do that again.
Oh, my goodness. That's so strange. My every dog I've had has been a water dog, but my golden, he was a ball player, so he would set the ball down in the water, drop the ball in the water, let it float out, jump in, swim, get it, swim to the steps, get out and do it over.
Yeah.
Over and over again. And, I mean, to the point of I had to make him stop because I thought he was going to drown because he was so tired. So,
well, at least he knew how to
entertain himself.
Of course, he's
a little hyperactive. Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No
good for him. None of our dogs have liked the water. As a matter of fact, the dogs we have now will stand on the side of the pool and bark at us if we are in there. But they won't come in.
That's funny. So you've got more dogs now?
We have 2 rescue dogs, which is why so many of my books have a rescue dog in it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Golden and Shepherd and I think Chow mix.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a... Treeing Walker Coonhound.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they climb. They are climbers,
yeah.
Which we did not know when we got the book, when we got the dog. And we had our yard fenced in. We first got her. She was out in the yard, and my husband was doing some yard work, and he heard the neighbor yell, "Oh, my God." And he said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Your dog just climbed the fence." He said, "You mean she jumped the fence?" She said, "No, I mean she climbed over the fence." He brought her back into the yard and watched her do it. She just put one paw over the other and just off she went. So,
oh my gosh,
we had to get a bigger
fence.
That's
crazy. Yeah, I gotta get a bigger fence.
Yeah, and she will climb the trees.
Goodness, just to get yeah, because they have that prey drive because of their breed.
Right.
The, We
had
squirrels
no idea. They
whatnot.
Just told her. They just told her she was a hound dog.
Does she the hound dog?
Oh my God! Yes. Oh yeah. And as a matter of fact, we have Bowie, our shepherd golden mix, has a very deep bark. She has that baying hound sound. And we have a, right now we have my oldest daughter's Puggle, who has a very high, shrieking, yippy bark. I'm on the screen. We have our property slopes way down to the road. Behind us, there's an old country road, and there's a couple of Amish farms down the road. And so when the horse and buggies go by, they must go out and bark. And it sounds like three-part harmony out there, because you've got the shrill shriek, and you've got the bang of the hound, and then you have the big barky boy. So,
yeah.
Very
oh,
pleasant.
My.
I'm sure they
I bet that's interesting. I bet they do.
Well, on Sundays, when they have Sunday worship, and you might have 35 buggies going by,
my
neighbors would just like to shoot me. Because the dogs they must go out and bark at every one of them. So sometimes you'll have
that's a requirement.
Six buggies go by. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a requirement. You lose your dog card if you don't go bark, you know.
That's exactly right.
So, like you said, you write a lot of rescue dogs into your stories. And do you think that we'll go ahead and talk about writing since we've talked about dogs this whole time. Do you think that animals and stories are good for moving the plot along, or what do you think their function, helping characterization of the character, the main characters?
Well, characterization, yes, but I don't know. I've had dogs all of my life, Tabitha, and so for me, it's just a normal way to live is to have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And in Last Chance Matinee, we have a character who is a dog rescuer.
Oh, okay.
So
that plays an important role in just who that person is. And tell us a little bit about, let's talk about Last Chance Matinee. It's getting great reviews and acclaimed across the board. So tell me about the story.
A book is actually based on something that happened to my mother. She found out when she was, I shouldn't say was based on something because the stories were very different, but when she was in her late 40s, she found out that her dad had another family in another state. And no one in her immediate family had any inkling of this. He had been in vaudeville. And he and I don't know whether this woman in Massachusetts, I don't know whether they were ever married. I can't find any indication that they were. But I know that he had a son with this woman in 1910.
Hmm.
And in 1913, she had another child. She had a baby daughter. And both she and the baby died. So here is my grandfather. This all happened before he met my grandmother. Here is my grandfather with this 3-year-old, and I'm sure he had no idea what to do with it, but he had a sister who was married, who had new children, who wanted to adopt the boy.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally gave his son to his sister to raise, his sister and her husband. And my mother, growing up, had met him, and she thought, of course, he was her cousin. The boy, the son, never knew that he was adopted. How all of this came out, the half brother, cousin, passed away, and my mother received a thank you card from his widow for the card or flowers, whatever she had sent, and. In the thank you note, the widow said, well, you know that Bill was your half-brother, right? Of course, my mother had no inkling. So she immediately picked up the phone. She said, what do you mean he's my brother? and the widow, her name is Alice, actually got this story from my great aunt, who had raised half brother, the cousin, but before she passed away.
Wow.
So he never knew, and nobody in my mom's immediate family knew until she got this letter, and she started asking her siblings, and nobody had ever even heard of this guy. But well, I remember when I was younger, we would go to visit them every summer. My aunt, my great aunt, and her husband, and my mom's cousin Bill, we would go to visit them every year. And here,
wow,
you know, it was, well, then we come to find out that apparently after this woman died, he had another girlfriend who had another child. And my mother said she remembered meeting her. And then my mother tried to get a hold of her after the whole story came out, and her daughter wrote to my mother and said, my mother doesn't really want to pursue this, any relationship with her father's other family, because it's just very painful to her. And
right.
I think my mother was very surprised, obviously, by the whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't think she was, she didn't seem distraught about it. She was like, boy, this is really curious, don't you think? Which I would have expected her to be a little more, I guess, dramatic about it. But my mother wasn't a very dramatic person. But the only thing I remember about my grandfather, he died when I was maybe three or four years old. I just remember he was a very jolly guy. And he had a great laugh. And that's really all I remember about the man. Yeah, I guess he was jolly.
Well, you know, I can see where she wouldn't be too distraught, because if it was before he even met her grandmother, you know,
right,
all that. But, I mean, people did interesting things. And I'm a big genealogy. I've done a lot of genealogy with my family, and finding out the family secrets is very interesting to me. It's neat, you know, to get those little snippets of – and. That she even met him. You know, I'm talking about people that were back before I even met him. But,
right.
But you know, even finding the little narratives about them. And, of course, it makes you want to just dig in and find out more about how did that come about. Because so many people were orphans, you know, and people died in childbirth, or they died, you know, half the family died from an illness or something. And things happen. People put people with aunts and uncles and sisters and neighbors. I mean, you know, if they couldn't afford to keep the kids without them, they had to work.
Yeah.
They did these things. And my great grandfather even and great grandmother were both orphans. And one of them was raised by a spinster aunt, but the other one went to an orphanage and then was warded out to a doctor. You know, he became a ward of a doctor so that he could apprentice with them and things. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's very interesting how all that works out.
Oh, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Always right around that, you know, turn of the century, the first 20 years of the 18th century, or interesting, yeah, really interesting.
Well, my mom and I always kind of laughed that my grandmother was born, and my mom's mother was born into a German immigrant family, and she was very straight-laced. And she was just a very somber person. And I could never figure out that pairing, because he was just such a fun guy.
Yeah.
And she was just very somber. Yeah. Well, you're talking about genealogy. I found that her mother, my great-grandmother, mother's side, was born in Germany. And I knew what her last name was, so I went on Ancestry.com, and I found her birth. I found where I found her baptism papers. Well, it turns out that my daughter and her boyfriend are going to Germany this summer. And I just, my great-grandmother was born over there, and here's the town she was in. She said, oh, my God, that's right on our route. So they're stopping in this little tiny town in Germany where my great-grandmother was born, and where her parents are both buried. My daughter pulled it up on, you know, you can get a picture of anything on the internet. She found the church.
Oh, yeah.
And the churchyard is right there. So she's going to be going there and taking pictures of my great-great-grandparents' graves and the church where my great-grandmother was baptized. So
interesting.
That's where a little genealogy can lead. Yeah, they're very excited about it. I think it's very cool.
Well, I think it's really neat. I think that, you know, anytime you can get your kids interested in their heritage, it's a cool thing. Anyway, my daughter could care less, but but yeah, I think it's neat. My mom and I, you know, we started this trek back when my grandmother was getting, you know, she was already in her dementia stage, and we couldn't get a lot of information, and we had so many holes, and so I started digging, and did you know this, and did you know this person died of this, and oh my gosh, and just really interesting, and you build this kind of, I don't know, it's just neat, and it makes me think about him, the half-brother, the Uncle Bill, Cousin Bill, that, you know, he must have really wondered. Oh, he didn't know. You said he didn't know. He never knew? Oh, wow.
No. Here's another interesting thing. Well, I thought it was interesting anyway. I was trying to look up something on my grandfather, and I couldn't find anything under his name. So I thought, well, I'll look up his sister because I knew her. I had great memories of visiting her in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So I knew where she lived. I knew what town she was in. And she had a totally different last name than my grandfather. And all of her brothers had a different last name than my grandfather. My grandfather changed his name when he moved down here.
Oh.
That's not the name.
A lot of people did that.
The name he was born with was not the name he went by when he moved down here. The last name, he changed his last name.
That's interesting. That makes it really hard to do genealogy searches on people.
Well, once we found out what his birth name was, we found him. And one of my cousins was in Boston a couple of years ago. And she took all the information that we had. And she said, is this possible that this is really him? This man who was, you know, this child that we found. And they looked it over. And they looked over everything she had said. Yeah, that's him. Changed his name.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It has to be him. If this is his sister and these guys are his brothers, that's him. So...
I think
like that were so much easier to do, you know, in the early 1900s. Even,
oh, yeah.
Just easy to change your name and move on.
Not so much, well, there wasn't it. You can't hide anymore.
Oh, no. Uh-uh.
So how did you take this story and weave it into your current release, your new release? How did you, I mean, that would definitely be something I would be inclined to say is story worthy. So, so how did you take that and turn it into, you know, your story?
Well, the book is really nothing like what really happened. And I've tried to, assure my cousins that there's no 1920s theater that belongs to the family up in the Pocono Mountains. There's no Victorian mansion there either, so everybody calm down. But it just, I know, it's hard to say sometimes how things come together in your head. I was talking to my editor because I said, this is the story that I want to tell. This is the germ. But if I write that story the way it really happened, I think it would have been a little darker than what I... than how I tend to write. I wanted to, not that I wanted to make light of the situation, but I just wanted it to be just a slightly lighter story than that. So, I don't know. It just came about. I know that sounds really dumb, doesn't it? I don't know how this happened.
Well, do you do the, well, what if she this, or what if he, do you ask yourself those questions and start to, you know, I'm getting into your mind because I'm a budding writer, so I like to get into authors' minds and figure out where they get their, you know, you've got the grain of sand, but what? How do you get the pearl? Where do you come to the pearl?
Well, I was thinking to make this more a contemporary story, I wanted three sisters, first of all, and I wanted two of them to be full sisters and the other one to be a half-sister that they didn't know about. Neither family knows about the other. So I put them each on different sides of the country. It just grows. Well, if you're a writer, then you know things just kind of grow organically. You think, I'd love to put something in the Poconos because I think it's just such a – it's totally underrated area. It's beautiful, the hills and mountains and woods and lakes. And it's a really nice area. So I thought I'd like to do that. I'll put my story there. And then the Sugar House Theater, I wanted to give them a reason why they had to be together, why they had to get to know each other. And money is a great instigator. They were not going to inherit anything from him until they did something. But I didn't want it to be something very mundane. So I was thinking, did you ever watch this TV show called Strange Inheritance?
No.
Oh, it's on cable here, and people who have inherited very bizarre things or odd things. And one time I caught the show, this woman she was a very young woman, she was like 22 years old, had inherited a movie theater, an old movie theater from her grandfather, and had to figure out what to do with it. And I thought, well, that's a real fun idea. Meanwhile, I had lived for many years in a little town outside of Philadelphia called Lansdowne. The Sugar House Theater in my book was really based on the 1920s Lansdowne Theater, which is being renovated. Did you see Silver Linings Playbook?
Yes.
Okay. Do you happen to recall the scene where Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper are running down the street and they run past an old theater where people are kind of pouring? Yeah, that's the Lansdowne Theater. That movie was shot all around Delaware County, which is where Lansdowne is located, outside of Philadelphia. And they shot in all different neighborhoods, but they shot that right on Lansdowne Avenue where the theater is. So. My husband was a contractor for 25 or 30 years, so I could ask him about renovations. Well, how much would it cost to do this or how much would it cost to do that? And I realized we're talking like $1 million plus to do something like that. So it just kind of all, you know, you have all these little germs inside your head and they start to like swarm together like iron filings on a magnet, you know, they all kind of like...
Right, that's what I was thinking, like magnets.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's how you know... That's how you know that a story is a good one, when they all start to come together on their own.
Well, it pretty much did that. So I liked the germs, so then I'm like, we'll play with this for a while. My editor loved it. And she had some really good ideas for edits, so it just all kind of came together. And I don't know.
You write between where you write some women's fiction and you write some romance, and some of it's a lot of crossover. Your women's fiction often has the romantic elements, even when it's not, you know, considered total romance. But what do you think? I mean, I love to read women's fiction because, you know, it's often more, maybe a little more realistic, but I'm also a romance junkie because I like my HEA. But what do you think that women's fiction provides to the reader that maybe if a strictly romance doesn't give them?
So that's a really good question. In a romance, the focus of the book, focus of the story, is always on the couple, is on the love story. Most women have more things going on in their lives. You have a lot of relationships. No, you know what I mean. You have a lot of relationships. You have friends. You have siblings. You have parents. You have next-door neighbors. You have people you went to school with. You have relationships with all of these people, and some of those relationships are very, very important. And can lead to situations of strife or drama. because I don't know any woman who has a drama-free life. Maybe not
that
all
we
the
strive
time,
for it every day.
Yeah, the truth. Especially if you have children, you know. Well, my kids are grown now, but I still hear from them every day, and you know, we still text back and forth. But there's always something going on in your life, and I think in women's fiction, you have the freedom. You, as the author, have freedom to focus more on the woman's life than just her love life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how else to explain it. Does that make sense to you, Tabitha?
Yeah, it does. And it's, yeah, you're free to explore those relationships in a deeper way than you could
mm-hmm.
in a romance, I think. And, you know, we, like you said, we all live those lives where we have all these relationships. And regardless of how hard I try, and believe me, I try really hard not to have any drama in my life. You still do, you know, because you have friends who are sick, or their mother's sick, or they're discovering things,
right.
or they're having, you know, problems with their romantic relationships, or problems with their children, or, you know, sisters and brothers and mothers.
You have aging parents.
Everything.
You have
so,
aging parents, and I know when my parents were still alive, my father had Alzheimer's from the time he was, I'm going to say, mid-60s. It started. And he died at 90. So there was a long period of time there. Which was a lot of issues for my mother to deal with. And that was a very interesting situation. That'll probably turn up in a book sometime, because my mother was totally in denial of the situation that my father was in, because I realized later that she was in denial because once she faced it, she would have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't ready to deal with it. And I completely understand that, because, I mean, who doesn't have situations in your life that you think, I'm not ready to deal with this right now. I will deal with this later. You just push it off.
My hands up.
yeah,
me too. yeah. No, I totally understand that. That's life, isn't it? Kind of.
Yeah.
I don't want to get up in the morning, but I have to. So. So, do you like to alter your writing schedule so that you can mix it up with the two different, you know, where you focus on maybe just a romantic relationship story and then switch off to something else?
Well, I think earlier you had said that, you know, a lot of my, and this is true, a lot of my books do walk the line very closely between women's fiction and contemporary romance. Because I always have other people in my books. I always have other relationships. I always have other family members. And those relationships are always explored. In addition to the, I mean, you don't fall in love in a vacuum.
That's
you
true.
Don't live in a vacuum.
Yeah.
There's always a lot going on. So that's, my books always reflect that. I think I try to make my characters interesting and relatable and true to what goes on in people's lives. So it really isn't that different. This is the first time I've actually signed a contract for books that were specifically women's fiction. And it's really each one of the books in the series focuses on one of the three sisters. One of them is the former child TV star who hated acting, but she made a lot of money and she invested well, so she just lives in Montana. She wants to be away from everybody. Didn't have a happy childhood. Never wanted the TV show. And she rescues dogs. The older sister is an alcoholic. She has a lot of brittle edges. She's divorced. She has a child that she loves very deeply. And the one great thing about this character is she's a great mother. She can be a lousy person sometimes, but she's a great mom and loves her kids. And she's a very interesting character. She developed so much more as the writing went on and the editing went on and the whole process of putting that book together went on. She just came together But she's got a lot of issues, and her story is going to have to be the last of the three because she's got a lot to deal with. She's got a lot of growing up to do, and she has to really come to terms with herself. Kara, the sister, she was the solo sister, the one on the East Coast. She is just getting over a nasty divorce. Her husband left her for one of her best friends, and the best friend is pregnant, and the wedding is soon, and it's a very small town that they live in, and all anybody talks about is the wedding. It's just driving her insane. She can't get away from it. So she doesn't really mind so much having an excuse to leave town for a while because she's kind of sick of the drama at this point. She was raised by a hippie mom. Her mom grew up in a commune. She's very laid back and very easygoing. And a lot of that came was adopted by the daughter. She's pretty easygoing. Out of the three sisters, she's probably the coolest, calmest, and most collected. So, and then the third one is the dog whisperer.
Oh, the dog whisperer. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we gotta have the dog whisperer in there.
And when they get to the will stipulates that they have to live together in the father's family home, and. Complete the renovations on this theater, and then once it's done, they can each get their inheritance and go their own way. But as he's dying, he realizes, I really did them a disservice. I should have let them know each other. And that's why he set his will up this way. Well, meanwhile, he forgot to tell them that they have an aunt living in that house. He had a sister.
Oh.
And they didn't know about him because she very much frowned upon the way he was living his life with the two families. And she said, you don't come see me. Don't come here. I don't want to see you until you straighten this out with these two women because this is wrong. This is a bad way to live. And he would call her every year on her birthday, and she would say, so did you tell him yet? And he'd say, well, no, not yet. And she'd say, well, talk to you next year. So he never told the kids about her because he knew they would want to go visit her, and then she would tell him because that's the kind of woman she is. She's a retired bank president. She takes no prisoners. She's in her late 60s, I guess, I have her. So she's a good character. She's an interesting person.
So they're thrust into an environment where they have to go live with her? While they renovate this theater. Oh, wow. Conflict.
Well, she's pretty cool. She really is. She was one of those characters that, again, if you're a writer, I'm sure you understand what I mean when I say she walked into the story. I wasn't expecting her.
That happens
to me with every book.
Yeah.
There she was, and I had to figure out who she was and what she was doing there. So that's where she came from.
It sounds like a really good trilogy of stories, and I like the, you know, they each have their own internal conflicts going on, and bringing that into a new relationship that's going to be tempestuous anyway. Is interesting, and then you've got this outside character who kind of holds it all together. Would be interesting to read. Just got it because we just said so. I'm excited to read it, and I'm excited to share it with my mom and see what she thinks too, because she reads a lot of women's fiction. She loves women's. She's not so much into the hot hardcore romances anymore, and I don't blame her. But you know, I download all kinds of stuff and share them with her, share books with her, and she's like, you know, a little too much skin in that one.
Well, who do you read as a general rule? Who are your favorites?
Who do I? My reads? I started in the adult romance arena with J.R. Ward and Sherilyn Kenyon mm-hmm. because I crossed over from YA, you know, with because I was a young adult librarian and I was reading young adult almost exclusively back then because I had to. So Twilight got me on that, and then everybody's like, hey, you should try these adult ones. And so I crossed over at that point. But I love good contemporaries. You know, I have my moments where I like the steamy stuff, but mostly I really like just that as long as it has a good storyline, it can fade because I have an imagination enough to know what goes on in the bedroom most of the time. I love historicals. I'll read any historical that you throw my way. But as far as contemporary, I don't know. I'm trying to think what the last contemporary I read even. I don't know. My bookshelf's so full over here. I like the tried and true standard authors, but I like finding new authors too. But, you know, throw me a historical. You give me some of those Elizabeth Hoyt and any of the old ones. I love them. And I don't know why, because I could never write that. I really admire historical writers for what they do.
I could never write them either. First of all, there's just too much research for my poor little
brain. I like the
but
research.
I know people who do
write.
It and do it well. One of my best friends, Victoria Alexander, writes some really funny, I guess they're Regency romances or Victorian era.
Uh-huh.
Romances that are hilariously funny, and that she does tons of research. I do have to do research for my books, even though they're contemporaries, because I don't know everything about everything. So I did have to look up some things about the 1920s theaters and that sort of thing for this book, but I don't think I would ever have the patience.
Well, the dialogue and the dialogue and the clothing and, you know, just it's so you have to fit in the rules, you know.
Yeah, you have to
know. And that's where I think I would lose
everything.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing. So when I read a really good historical, I'm always just like in awe of that author and just think, wow, you know. One of my favorite newer ones is Kerrigan Byrne. I love her books. I also love a good rom-com, like Tonosinski, Chrissy Craig, who's a friend of mine in her Divorce Desperate series.
Oh, you know what? I met her years ago at a conference, and I really liked her.
I thought she was such a
nice person. She just did some great things at this conference. I just really have great admiration for her.
She is a wonderful, wonderful lady. She's part of our local RWA chapter, and she's just does a lot for us too. So, and she does a lot for the teens too with her Shadow Falls series too. She loves to work with the kids, so and she's just a great lady, super great lady. But
I'm not surprised.
Contemporary are hilarious. They're hilarious. I mean, every bit of her humor comes out in them, and it's just, you know, if you want a good break book, you know, break from the stories of that make your heart cringe and hurt sometimes. Hers are just hilarious. You just laugh through the whole thing.
I think I read one or two of her books, a couple years ago. I think after that conference I did. And she,
yeah. She's super cool.
I have a lot of respect for her.
What do you read in your free time?
Oh, mostly thrillers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love suspense. I love thrillers. I love Lisa Gardner. I love James Lee Burke.
Uh-huh.
J.D. Robb.
Uh-huh.
I love all those books.
So you like the crimish ones a little better than...
Yeah.
Yeah, not the creepy psycho thriller things that are so popular right now, which I can't get into because I don't know enough psycho people... in my lifetime that I don't need to be around anybody in a book like that. I read Gone Girl and just, I tell people all the time, if it wasn't on my Kindle, I would have thrown it at the wall because I was like, I just hate her.
She was a tough cookie.
Wow. So, yeah. Enough in the world for, I don't need to read any of those. They, you know, creep me out. So what is your writing schedule like during the year? Do you?
I'm sorry?
What is your writing schedule like throughout the year? Do you have a certain number of books you plan to do every year? Or
I usually do two.
Two
books a year, yeah. It's about all I can handle.
Spend a lot of time. How many times do you go through edits with your editor? It's ready for publication.
You mean on each book?
Yeah.
How many times? Well, I happen to have a really, really good editor. She's a great editor. She's a hard taskmaster, let me tell you. So sometimes we'll do two rounds of edits.
Oh, that's good.
And, you know, it's interesting because she's a real stickler for detail, and she's very nitpicky. And she always says, well, you know, it's your book. You don't have to do this. But I was thinking maybe you might want to think about. And it's annoying as hell because she's always right.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll think, you know, if I could say, oh, no, I don't see it that way at all, that I wouldn't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you try to be honest, try to have an honest relationship with your editor, and you look at it and you say, yeah, maybe I should have done that. Okay. You know, and then I'll do it, and then she'll read it over and say, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted. But then
awesome.
I'm annoyed with myself that I didn't think of it myself and do it the first time. But so when you're writing a 400-and-some-page book, sometimes things get away from you, and you think, on this book, on Last Chance Matinee, the one thing that was just so glaring that I should have done was I didn't give enough definition and to the theater. I didn't describe it well. I didn't describe it as much as I should have, let me put it that way.
Right.
She'll say, well, I wanted to see this and I wanted to see that, and I'm thinking, duh. Yeah, I'd like to see that too. So then go back and put it in. But I'm just very lucky that I have a really smart editor who I'm very much in sync with, and when she'll pick up things and she'll say, did you think about this? And I said, no, but I'm thinking about it now. So it works out. And the thing is, I can say honestly say she has made every book better. Every book is so much better. And if you can say that, then you have a good editor. Editing is not easy. It can't be an easy job.
Yeah.
Maybe not as hard as writing the book, but editing the book is tough.
I don't know. I think I'd rather write it than edit it because I don't know. I think certain people have that, the gift of being, you know, the outside person looking in editing and can see those things because, you know, as well as I do, when you write, you don't ever see them. I mean, you can go back and read it 15 times and you don't see it. And then when they mention something, you go, oh.
Yeah.
So just
that's
like
exactly what happens.
So, yeah, I mean, that you can't put enough emphasis on the importance of a good relationship with an editor. And sometimes people don't luck out and find a good editor right away. You know, especially if you're traditionally published and with a big print house, because sometimes you may not, you know, click with the right editor right away. Yeah. So kind of like agents,
every
same thing, but
every editor is not necessarily going to get
mm-hmm.
what you do or get your voice or even like your voice.
Yeah.
But you don't have a choice.
It's a great
you get
thing.
The editor. I'm sorry?
Yeah, you get what you get, right?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I think if you were an important enough writer and you really had a problem with your editor, I'm sure that adjustments would be made. I've just been lucky. I've never had that problem. This is the fourth editor that I've had in 20-some years, and I've been lucky. I've always had good editing. So,
well, it's a very important relationship, and it people have to look, if you're a new writer like myself, you have to look at it as the person that really, you know, puts the glow and glitter on your book, because as writers, we're kind of blind to our own writing sometimes. You know, it always helps to have that person, whether you go, whether you're traditionally published or not, having that editor is a very important thing.
Yeah, I've been very lucky. I've always had good editors, and they've always sort of, I guess, understood my voice or gotten my voice or whatever. So, but you're right. Sometimes when you're telling the story, you get really involved in certain aspects of the story, and other things sort of slip to the side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe descriptions or maybe a little more internal dialogue sometimes is needed. A little more introspection.
Yes. Because you're in that character's head, but that doesn't mean the reader is.
Do you know that's exactly what it is? That's exactly what it is, because I know why she did certain things. I know what she was thinking. I just forgot. I forgot to say it on the page. So,
yeah. I've actually read some books like that. So, yeah, that it's kind of like, why'd she do that? But, yeah, I understand that completely. So what would you tell somebody who, you know, maybe they've started writing, they're not sure where they want to go with their writing or what their next step would be? What would be, like, the one piece of advice you would give them?
Well, I would give them two.
Okay.
First one is read. Read as much as you can. Read as widely as you can. Read romance. Read science fiction. Read fantasy. Read just to sort of integrate how stories are put together.
Mm-hmm.
Read the best in those genres. If you want to write romance, read the best. Read people like Susan Elizabeth Phillips or Nora Roberts, the people who have been around for a while. They've been around for a while for a reason, because
they've mastered the craft.
I read Susan Elizabeth Phillips' her book from last year, whatever was new last year, and I can't remember the title of it, so hopefully she doesn't tune into the station. I can't think of the title of it, but it was wonderful. She just has a knack for characters.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific book. Kristen Higgins
is
another one who is a terrific writer, and I don't think she gets as much attention as she should in some circles. I don't think she's taken as seriously as she should be. She's a really good writer. She writes great comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would read people like that. I would read people that have been around for a while who have really perfected their craft. Then I would probably, or simultaneously, I would join RWA. Even if you're not going to write strict romance, there are a lot of workshops on craft and on plotting and on characterization that cross genres. I mean, characters are characters. So if you join RWA, and if you're lucky enough to have a local chapter, then you can go to meetings, you can network, you can get to know other writers. And when I first started writing, I didn't know any other writers.
Right, me either.
I'd never heard of RWA. I had no idea what I was doing. Somehow I managed to write a book, and somehow I managed to get it published, but I had no clue. But I've been a reader all my life.
Well, RWA is a very, especially, it's okay. especially the local chapter, is a very good support system. And, you know, my local chapter, we spend a lot of time boosting each other up because the writer's life is solitary and we have a lot of self-doubt. That's really important, and I agree with that. I agree with that a lot. And the networking is amazing.
Well, not only that, the importance of having other writers in your circle, your inner circle, things happen that nobody else understands. Your family doesn't understand. Your friends
yep.
who are non-writers don't understand why. Gosh, years ago when I first started out, and one of my friends said, "You have to enter contests." So I said, "Okay." So I won a bunch of them, and I was so excited every time. And, you know, everybody in my family was like, "Oh, that's nice, Mom." No, it's not nice. It's
awesome.
Flattering.
Yeah, I understand
nice.
That.
The first time you make the New York Times list, you're like, "Oh, my
yeah.
God, I can't believe this happened. This is so exciting. This is so wonderful. That's nice." No, it's not
yeah.
nice. My whole world just turned on its axis. Don't say it's nice, but they just don't, you know. And then you can't really expect them to understand because they
right.
don't know how many books you have to sell to make that cut.
Exactly.
How hard you worked on that book. Or get really good reviews, and you're excited, and you get a really bad review, and you're like, "Oh, my God. Am I that bad?" I mean, I just really take it all to heart. So I try not to read.
Yeah.
I try not to read any of them because if you start to review, to read all the reviews that are like all the 5-star reviews, you think, "Damn, I walk on water." And then you read, you know, the 2-star reviews and you think, "Oh, God, I'm horrible. I'm the worst person. How did I ever get published?" So, you know, you can really
right.
make your personality go off the rails. So just don't.
Crazy bipolar.
Don't. Yes. And my publicist at Pocket, Simon & Schuster Gallery, she will send me the good ones.
Well, that's good. Then you don't have to go searching.
To just read, yeah. Just send me the good ones. But Well, I knew that this book, I've seen a lot of really, I have to say, fabulous reviews for this book, and I'm very humbled by it because I love this book. But I knew that there would be some people who didn't like the fact that every thread was not tied off at the end of the book, but there's an overriding arc in this story. Who was
right.
this guy? Who was their father? Well, if everybody knew at the end of the first book who their father was and came to grips with everything, there'd be no reason for 2 more books. And it's not that easy. Life is not that easy. The answers are not that easy. They're not that forthcoming when you think they
sure.
should be. So, but it's very interesting. There were a few people who were bothered by the fact that the book didn't end with every question answered, but most of people just said, "I can't wait for the next book because I want to see what happens next." So that's really what you like to see. So what you like to hear.
That is very true. Well, and maybe it's not less right for them. So if they bothered that much, but yeah, I bet they pick up the next book anyway. So,
well, one would hope, but, but you know what?
Well,
you're not gonna please everybody, and you really
oh,
have
that's
to,
for sure.
You have to keep that in mind. You know, everybody's entitled to their opinion,
and
one person isn't right and the other person wrong. You can't read a bad review and say, "Well, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. They're wrong." No, they're not wrong. You're what you wrote just did not resonate with them, and that's okay. You can
that's
tell I've
very
been doing
true.
This for a long time. I've mellowed. I would not have said that 20 years ago.
I hate to cut you off, but we have like 14 seconds left, and I want people to be able to find you online. I know we've talked a lot. Thank you so much for being on. You can find out more about Mariah Stewart at mariahstewart.com. And
thank
you again for being on. I appreciate it.
Talk
Thanks
you.
So much.
Bye-bye.